It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
And happy Friday. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website, Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. We've got a great show planned for you today. We'll be talking with Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, Karen Levine, award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, and Randall O'Toole. He is a transportation and land use expert. He's a senior fellow with the Cato Institute. And we'll be talking about this assault on automobiles, particularly even during the pandemic. And so that'll be an important conversation as well. It is Friday, Steve, one of your very favorite days.
Yeah, I'll try to contain myself.
So do you have a big weekend planned?
Yes.
Oh.
I got my head is spinning right now just thinking about all the things that are going to happen between now and 72 hours from now.
Okay. Well, have a great weekend. Let's jump in here. As we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And so some of the questions that we need to ask is Rudyard Kipling, who is the author of The Jungle Book. He says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And we've got a headline here that we're going to go through and ask many of those questions. Before we do that, though, I thought I would do some car quotes or auto quotes since we were going to be talking about automobiles a little bit later in the show. So Tommy Cooper, a comedian, said, you know, someone actually complimented me on my driving the other day. They left a little note on the windshield, and it said, parking fine. Ha.
Okay, don't give up your day job.
Don't give up my day job. Okay. Another thing, would highly recommend that you help us out. Grassroots, we need to help Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas as they're raising money to get this minority bus tour going. And we're coming in close to Election Day. They're going to take this into minority communities. My understanding is that President Trump's approval rating in the black community is increasing significantly, Steve. And Reggie and Johnny want to continue with that. But they need $10,000 to wrap the bus, to put the vinyl wrap on it. And we are helping them with that. And thank you to all of you listeners. But to go to their website, imatrumpster.com, imatrumpster.com, contribute. For every $50 you contribute, you will get one of those cool battle masks. And let me know that you've done that. And then we will be back in touch with you when we get this party with the bus all figured out. But I would highly recommend that you do that.
Their story is it's really a cool story. Well, it's been, about a month or so since we had them on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Back up four years, 2016. And were caught up in what Donald Trump had to say about intellectual property rights. And it got him hooked. And, they are not a single issue pair of guys here. They obviously have, that was kind of like the hook.
Because they've been in the entertainment business for so long and they've seen people rip off their products or
yes.
their, some of the songs that they've written. And so they understand how important that is. And in that intellectual property rights component, Steve, is property rights. And ultimately socialism, Marxism, comes down to getting rid of our individualism and then also getting rid of our private property. And that is not only, our physical private property, but also the things of our mind, our talents. And so they are now fervent Donald Trump supporters and highly recommend that you'd help them out.
Yes, across many issues, not just the intellectual property rights is what I was trying to say.
So let's jump over here to one of these headlines. Remember the I Have a Dream speech from Martin Luther King Jr., where he said, I have a dream that one day my little children will be judged not on the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And we have something just reported in the Business Journal. It says it has to be done. Denver business leaders launch initiative for a more inclusive economy. It says a group of corporate leaders from throughout the Denver area is launching an inclusive economy movement, hoping to diversify all levels of their workforces and to inspire other employers to do the same by their actions. Just a handful of companies are on the ground floor of the new effort, but they are some of the largest and most visible employers in the area. From Pinnacle Insurance to Janice Henderson to IMA Financial Group, these pioneers are signing a pledge whose author hopes it will drive companies beyond the platitudes they have offered on diversity for 10 years toward a measurable action that can shake up the Denver economy over the next decade. Helen Hayes, the founder of Activate Workforce Solutions, a four-year-old company that helps employers hire people of color, refugees, and other marginalized communities, dreamed up the initiative when her business essentially stopped in March and April. A former C-level executive who had spent 20 years on Wall Street, Hayes said she'd seen too many recessions in the past where businesses came out focused on increasing revenue and profits and didn't pay attention to the increasing skills and earnings gaps between segments of society. So she put together a three-point call to action and brought it to Colorado Concern and other organizations of CEOs, and she found business leaders had interest in the ideals. I wonder what those ideals are exactly. It asked employers to do the following. Invest in a new pipeline for middle-skilled workers who are now disproportionately white through apprenticeships and partnerships. Wait a minute. This looks like this is somewhat race-based to me, okay? It says diversify their supply chains through procurement practices that support minority-owned businesses and do the work rather than just put out high-minded corporate social responsibility platforms. You can see this is somewhat Marxist, Steve, in it is taking away the individuality of the person on the fact that they would go out and maybe study, get additional skills so that they can make themselves better, that they can be more valuable to their employer. Instead, it is now going to define people instead of their individuality by a group and is encouraging businesses to hire by groups instead of by individuals. And Steve, we know it's individuals that makes the world go round, not groups. This is very dangerous, Steve.
Well, as you started out, by quoting Martin Luther King, it flies in the face of that, doesn't it?
It does, and it's defining people as groups instead of defining them by who they are as an individual. And I'm just so totally shocked. These are becoming kind of the new, we were talking about the mass earlier in the week, the new Jim Crow laws. This is something that is supposedly voluntary that these businesses are going to do. But, you know, we're seeing what's happening in our society now where there's shaming if you don't agree with somebody. There's kind of mob rule. I mean, you can see where this is going to go, Steve. And I don't think that it is good for the Denver metro area. Instead of, I'm kind of tacitly saying that we're going to pull people down to lift some other people up. Let's lift everybody up instead of pulling people down, Steve.
Well, I'm trying to, while you're speaking here, I'm stepping back through the three-point ideals, and each one of them is seriously flawed. I mean, I guess I went into the second one right away about, where was it? Diversify their supply chains through procurement practices that support minority-owned businesses. What about just competing in the marketplace?
Wouldn't that be a fine idea?
Well, where I'm going with this, that whole thought that every one of these things right now is kind of like a suggestion. When does it become a mandate?
And you're absolutely right. These things come out as a suggestion. And if it's a great suggestion, it should be able to compete on its own merits in the battle of ideas. And so let's keep an eye on this. I think this is, I'm very sad about this, that we're going to be defining our businesses by who they hire by groups instead of individuals. But let's go to break. Before we do that, Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners. They have five locations, and this weekend, it'd be fun. Just go out over the patio, get some nachos, have a beverage. Hopefully there's some sports on the big screen TVs, or you can actually pick up Hooters and take it home. They have curbside service and also delivery service. So for more information, go to order.hooters.com. That's order.hooters.com. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with...
Before we go to break, I think we have another minute yet or so. Every time you talk about there's going to be some sports, I got to laugh. Probably everybody who's listening is probably aware of what's going on in Jefferson County with Bandimere Speedway. The fact that they held their 4th of July thing, and they were only permitted to have 175 people.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, right. Well, anybody who's ever been there knows how big that venue is. So every time you say, hey, there's going to be sports, I'm thinking of Coors Field, built for 46,000, 47,000 people. How many people are they going to be allowed to have in there?
Well, I don't know, but at least we'll be able to watch it on TV, and Hooters Restaurants is a great place that you can do that at.
Yes.
So we're going to go to break. We'll be talking with Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, and then third and fourth segment, Randall O'Toole. Stay tuned.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, KimMunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Maybe you can drive my car.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we'd really appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me is one of my valued partners, Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group. He is a specialist in the mortgage arena. And actually, he works with a lot of different lenders. So he can work to tailor your individual needs. And there's a lot going on in these markets right now. Lauren Levy, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me, Kim.
So interest rates are at historic lows. And while somebody might, if they were over in the bond market trying to get income, that might not be the best place to do that. But over, if you want to refinance a home, my gosh, there's a lot of opportunities, Lauren Levy.
That's very true. And you and I talk about this all the time, Kim. Like, when there is weakness in a segment, like you just mentioned, where maybe some older folks who live on fixed income aren't getting the interest rates that they feel they should, that provides an opportunity for someone else. And for the long little while here, it's been in home loan rates, and we're seeing a ton of refinance activity and people buying because the housing market is strong, and with these low rates, your purchasing power is a lot greater than it used to be.
Well, and the fact that you work with a lot of different lenders, I think, is a real positive, Lauren Levy.
I agree. One of the things I notice, and I have friends in the industry, and you know, some lenders sometimes will come out with really attractive rates. They'll get a bunch of loans in. They get really bogged down where it takes weeks and weeks and weeks to get them done. And sometimes, inevitably, you end up caught up in the middle of that. But when you're a broker and then get that next call, sometimes you can go to a different lender and get to where it's a little bit faster and a little bit better service. So it's nice for you to bounce around. And some lenders definitely specialize in, let's say, VA or FHA loans, where other lenders don't do them a whole lot. So it's good to have the full mix and be able to help everybody.
Okay. One other thing, Lauren Levy, and we haven't talked about this for several weeks, but, you know, senior citizens, may have seen their portfolios change. You know, it's very difficult to find yield in the markets right now. And so this reverse mortgage program could be very attractive for folks in that arena. And that is so important that your lender understand it so that they can help the client and the client's family understand that as well.
Absolutely. And reverse mortgages are complicated, and it's really important to sit down with someone who knows if it's right for you even in the first place or not, and this is just going to tell you to do it. But there's so many reasons for doing them. You have to weigh the negatives versus the positives and see if it's right for you. Just a quick blurb or an example. I just met with a gentleman the other day. He unfortunately has a wife who has dementia and had to go into an assisted living facility. Well, to be Medicaid eligible, you have to spend down your assets, which is what he had to do. So now, in order to live, his primary asset is his home. But he doesn't want to leave his home. So the only way to do it now is for him to take out a reverse to get income and cash out of his home that he can enjoy now while he's alive and not, you know, leave it to his estate when he passes away. He needs the money now. And the reverse is stepping in to fill that void for him, and it's perfect for him.
But like you say, it's each individual. They have individual needs. They need to understand it. And that is why sitting down with you, Lauren Levy, would be a really good idea if that's something that they want to take a look at. Because if it's not totally right, then it doesn't work very well. So you got to make sure that it's right for the person.
That's right. And if it's not right, it's not. The one negative that you hear about on reverses is that they're expensive, and there is a pretty sizable fee that the Housing and Urban Development Department charges for it for insurance. So you want to make sure it is right for the person. You definitely don't want to push anybody into a loan that isn't right for them, and that's one commitment we make that we'll never do to somebody.
Well, I know that that is definitely true. And Lauren Levy, I know there's great opportunity out there right now, so people can get more information about you where?
They can either go to my website at www.polyfigroup.com, or they can just call me at 303-880-8881.
And again, that number is 303-880-8881. Lauren Levy, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, Kim. Thank you so much.
And on the line with me is Karen Levine. She was one of my valued partners. She is an award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance. And wanted to talk a little bit about home ownership versus renting. Karen, you have been in the real estate market as a realtor for many, many years. And of course, working with a professional like you, I would highly recommend it as we're in this crazy, very hot market out there. But we were together recently and you quoted a National Association of Realtors study that kind of stopped me in my tracks regarding creating wealth, whether or not you own a home or you're renting. So tell us a little bit about that, Karen Levine.
Well, Kim, as you know, I sit on the National Association of Realtors as one of their board of directors, and we represent over 1.4 million realtors nationwide. We have an amazing economist on staff, Lawrence Yoon. And he had shared a statistic that I think it's important for your listeners to know about, that those renting typically are able to maybe pull together a wealth portfolio of maybe $5,000. But those who have home ownership are able to develop and build their wealth through their home ownership experience. And they can accumulate more than $100,000. And that disparity is quite large, as you would agree. And I think what's interesting to see what's happening in our cities and our suburbs nationwide is that we continue to build rental product, which would, in my opinion, ensue that our government would like to see us out of home ownership and into rental units. Because when you own your home, you have a lot more control over your finances and your decisions. And when you rent, you have less control. So I would encourage any of your listeners who have thought about home ownership and think that they're not able to, let's sit down, Lauren, your other valued partner with the
Polygon,
mortgage company.
Yeah, Polygon
and,
Financial
yeah,
Group.
Polygon.
Yeah,
Polygon. Mm-hmm. And myself, and let's see if strategically we can show them how they can become a homeowner.
Well, and Karen, I think some people say, oh my gosh, the market has been so hot, the prices are so high for a home, I'm going to wait. Yet, on the other hand, interest rates are so low, so it gives a great opportunity for people to get into a home. And you look at it, if you're throwing away $2,000-$3,000 a month on rent, and you compare that with a mortgage payment where you're paying down your principal and you're creating equity, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that maybe home ownership might be a really good idea, Karen Levine.
Well, of course, as a realtor and as a real estate professional for many years, I have seen the benefit of home ownership not only to the individual homeowner, but to our communities throughout America. And I encourage anyone who hasn't had that opportunity or is looking for a change in their current home situation to reach out to me, and I would love to guide them through the process.
You know, and Karen Levine, I can so endorse you. We've known each other for many, many years. You are a true professional, and you have these really gentle but firm negotiating skills, which is really great to have on your side of the table. And I would highly recommend that people reach out to you to, you know, as you mentioned, sit down with you and Lauren and just see what opportunities might be out there, because it never hurts to just check things out, Karen Levine.
Right, and as I think we all know as listeners of your show, Kim, knowledge is power. And so if we can help you become more educated to make good decisions, that's our goal.
For sure. And that phone number for Karen Levine is 303-877-7516. Again, 303-877-7516. Karen Levine, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
That sounds great, Kim. You do the same.
And Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, how are you doing this Friday morning?
Well, it's Friday, so I know Steve's happy, and I know I'm happy, and I bet you are too.
And I'm happy as well, for sure. But, hey, I wanted to ask you about quarterly earnings reports. You know, we're starting to see these earnings reports come out. And what is something that people need to look for? I know they come out once a quarter, and it, you know, all the pundits are talking about it. But what should people look for in these quarterly earnings reports?
Well, you know, Kim, the first thing I would say is you want to compare a company's earnings for like the second quarter of this year to the second quarter of last year. It's not a good comparison necessarily to look at the second quarter versus the first quarter. You want to look at what they did this year compared to last year, because there could be seasonality between the different quarters, Kim.
Okay.
A good example would be, you know, a lot of retail stocks. You know, they're going to have hopefully a really good fourth quarter around the holiday season. Their first quarter, which runs from like January to March, once Christmas is over, you know, there's no way you would expect their earnings to be as good in that quarter as the fourth. So that's why you always compare last year's quarter to this year's quarter.
Okay. What
does
else?
That make sense?
It does. So what else should people look for? Are they looking for growth normally in earnings over, you know, from last year to this year, right?
Yeah, growth would be good. And now, you know, some of that's a little bit out the window right now, Kim, with what has happened with the shutdowns and all of that. Many companies are going to, you know, they had a worse first quarter than last year. They're likely, some of them, to have a worse second quarter. But, you know, you got to have some common sense and say, well, you know, there's extenuating circumstances this year. But, yeah, what you want to see is a decent amount of growth, hopefully in both the top line, which is the revenues, and the bottom line, which is the earnings per share. I mean, the higher the percentage that you're seeing of that growth, the better it usually is. And, Kim, one thing you can look for that has been kind of a common piece of DNA or a genetic marker in some of the biggest winning companies or stocks of all time is what's called acceleration of earnings growth. Now, this is where you might look at previous, like, first, second, third quarter, And let's say in the first quarter, the company's earnings were up 10% from the year before. The second quarter, all of a sudden, it jumps to 30%, and then the next quarter, the growth is 40%. That's what's called earnings growth acceleration, and some of the biggest winning stocks of all time have showed that sudden growth and acceleration in the rate of their earnings growth before they went on to become some of the biggest winners of all time.
Okay, well, that's good to know, and as we have these earnings reports coming out, what people could say, find a company that they're very interested in and get that and take a look at it. I guess I'm intrigued on this accelerated earnings growth. Does that happen very often? I mean, that would be the stocks people might want to really get into for wealth creation.
Yeah, they usually tend to perform better. You know, having some kind of a service where it lists out, you know, several quarters and what they've been one after the other is very helpful in spotting that. If you're just reading the 10-Qs, then you have to kind of look at several of them and do the calculations yourself. So this isn't a plug or a paid advertisement. I use a program called MarketSmith, which comes from the William O'Neill database, and it'll show that earnings acceleration very clearly right on the chart, so it helps you spot it.
Okay. Okay. Well, if you'd like to sit down with Jason McBride and talk about this, talk about your portfolio, or any of his colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management, go to our shared landing page, airpresidential.com. That's air, A-I-R, presidential.com. Or the phone number over there is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, thanks so much. You have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Sounds great, Kim. You too.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there at kimmunson.com, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. We'd appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. You know, we realize that freedom of mobility, to be able to move around, is inherent for free people. And Randall O'Toole, I'm thrilled to talk with him. He is a senior fellow with the Cato Institute. He specializes in transportation and land use policy. He's the author of Romance of the Rails, Why the Passenger Trains We Love Are Not the Transportation We Need. And he's written a really important piece that was published in Complete Colorado, where he said that the anti-auto movement anti-auto movement is extra irrational in this pandemic. So Randall O'Toole, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. As you know, you and I both like mobility, and autos are really terrific for empowering people to get where they want to when they want to. But you start off this piece with saying the pandemic has reminded us that our society has to be resilient to face all sorts of unexpected events, and this is doubly true for transportation. Why, Randall O'Toole?
Well, we've had all kinds of unexpected events in the past couple of decades. It was 9-1-1, Hurricane Katrina, wildfires in California and Colorado, the financial panic of 2008. And our transportation systems responded very differently to these different events. The mass transportation, like planes and cars, or planes and trains and buses responded very poorly. They didn't evacuate people during Hurricane Katrina. They didn't protect people from diseases like the current pandemic. Because they're so labor intensive, they had to be cut way back during financial crises. Whereas highways and motor vehicles responded very well to all these different situations. The highways are there. It doesn't matter if there's a budget cut. The highways are there. You can drive on them. The safest way to get around in a pandemic or epidemic is in your private automobile. You need to evacuate because of a hurricane or a forest fire. Automobiles are the best way to do it. They're the quickest way to get lots and lots of people out. Something like 4 million people evacuated the South Texas Gulf Coast, Houston, Galveston area before Hurricane Rita hit in 2005. So automobiles are a resilient form of transportation. They're also a good way to provide aid after an event like a hurricane or a tornado or a forest fire. Whereas mass transit, Amtrak, things like that have very low resiliency. And if we're going to be prepared for the next event, whatever it is, whether it's an earthquake or a volcano or whatever, that means we need to provide automobiles or allow people to drive automobiles. And yet we see all of this anti-automobile stuff going around. We see people saying, well, let's close streets to automobiles. Let's take half the lanes of major streets like Colfax in Denver and dedicate them to buses and don't allow automobiles on those lanes. And all kinds of other things like this that are anti-automobile and pro-transit, which means pro-a system that doesn't work very well and isn't resilient. This is very short-sighted thinking.
Well, and we've seen this happen in Denver. As I've gone into Denver, and I'm actually trying not to go in there very often anymore because it's not the city that it was when I first moved to Colorado. But I saw some of the streets barricaded, and I'm like, that's interesting. And then I realized that that is exactly what they're doing, is closing some of these streets to traffic. And to your point, during some kind of an event where people might need to get out of a city, the fact that they would close down lanes, you mentioned in this piece that you did in Complete Colorado, that in that fire out in California, the people actually burned in their cars because some of the lanes had been taken away, through prior public policy.
Yes, that was a city in Colorado called Paradise. It was in the Sierra Nevada up above Sacramento. And there was a forest fire in 2008 that came very close to the town, and people looked around and realized we don't have that many good escape routes. There was a couple of two-lane roads and one four-lane road. They said a grand jury actually issued a report that said we should turn some of those two-lane roads into four-lane roads so that we can evacuate people from Paradise if there's ever another fire. Well, instead, they took the four-lane road and turned it into a two-lane road. They called it a road diet. And then in 2018, 10 years later, another fire came and it swept through the town and people tried to evacuate and 84 people died. And some of them died sitting in their cars trying to get out because of the traffic jam because they had road dieted the street. So you look around California, Los Angeles is right in the path of tsunamis, if there's ever a big earthquake. And there's a street called Venice Boulevard that is a designated tsunami route, and they've road dieted that. They've turned it from a four-lane to a two-lane street. And they've done it in such a way that you can't drive on the other lanes. It's not like they just put up, orange pylons or something. They put in concrete barriers to make it impossible to drive in the other lane. So they are going to have serious problems if there's a tsunami. And we see this anti-automobile mentality, and it's really upsetting, and it makes me think that these people don't care about what happens to people. It's more the principle of the thing for them.
Well, yeah, ideally our quote-unquote elected officials or those politicians and bureaucrats, I think everyday Americans had kind of trusted that these people had our best interest in mind. But what's been so interesting about this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption is the veil has really come off on a number of these agendas that have been kind of percolating underneath the surface, and people have not been paying attention to them. But I think everyday people are starting to pay attention. What do you think about that, Randall O'Toole?
Well, unfortunately, the other side has very loud voices. For example, there's a U.S. representative from Massachusetts who says inequities between black and white households are caused by lack of access to affordable, rapid, reliable transportation. And her solution is to spend more money subsidizing mass transit. The head of the chair of San Antonio's transit agency says, on average, a person of color who takes the bus to work in San Antonio does not have a car. Well, it turns out that's not true. Most people of color in San Antonio who take a bus to work do have a car in their household. But the point is, they are saying over and over again, we need to give more money to mass transit for social justice. Well, I have news for them. America has two transportation systems. There's the first-class transportation, also known as automobiles, that's fast, convenient, comfortable, and insulates people from exposure to infectious diseases. And then there's steerage, which is slow, uncomfortable, inconvenient, and exposes people to all kinds of infectious diseases. Steerage is also known as public transit. And the idea that we should make low-income people dependent on steerage and not encourage them to join everybody else in having first-class transportation, that's repugnant. To me, that's racist. It's not racist to say let people have cars. It's racist to say let's let poor people take steerage and the rest of us can get around in first-class transportation.
Although I think the movement is to try to move many more people to steerage to try to take away their autos. And that's the way this narrative works on socialism. Instead of lifting people up, it drags people down. And so instead of trying to put more people into this public transportation, which, as we've seen through this pandemic, was much less safe than in your individual vehicle, it's like, how can we figure out that people can have the freedom to have their own vehicle? I mean, think about it, Randall O'Toole, that working mother, if she had her own vehicle where she could go to and from work or, you know, drop her kids off at maybe a different daycare, a different babysitter, that vehicle, it, you know, gives her so much more freedom versus having to figure out maybe childcare in the neighborhood. She goes and she stands at the bus stop and waits for the bus, then has to go through the whole bus route. I mean, it's not an effective use of her time. And so instead of trying to push more people into transportation like that, it seems like we'd want to empower them to have more freedom of mobility.
Well, that's not just hypothetical. There are nonprofit groups scattered around the country, and I don't know of any in Colorado, but there's some big ones in Wisconsin. Their job to get poor people into cars. If you have a poor credit rating and you want to buy a used car, you can go to a bank and they'll give you a loan and they'll charge you 20% interest. And that just makes it prohibitive. You know, even if you're only buying a $4,000 car, mm-hmm. 20% interest loan is going to be really expensive. So these groups like On the Road Lending and Wheels to Work and Ways to Work are some of the names of the groups. They offer low interest loans. In some cases, if you keep up your payments, you get a zero interest loan. And they've studied the people who they've helped to buy cars. And a very high percentage of them get better jobs, they get higher income, they've reduced their transportation costs, and they've improved their housing as well. So if you're low income, having a car can make the difference between you having a job and not having one, having better housing and having crummy housing, and so forth. So if you believe in social justice, then your goal should be to get cars for low-income people, not to spend more money on giant bureaucracies like RTD so they can run their buses and trains practically empty.
Well, and that will be a great segue to our next segment, and that is that you said RTD is in what's known as the transit death spiral. And so we'll want to talk about that. This is Kim Munson, and my guest today is Randall O'Toole, a senior fellow with the Cato Institute. He specializes in transportation and land use planning. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Randall O'Toole.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. We'll have all of our guests, our new podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson, as well as these great op-eds. With me is Randall O'Toole. He is a senior fellow with the Cato Institute. He specializes in transportation and land use policy, and he is the author of the book, Romance of the Rails, Why the Passenger Trains We Love Are Not the Transportation That We Need. So Randall O'Toole, always a great conversation when I have you on. And let's talk a little bit about RTD here in the Denver metro area. In this piece in Complete Colorado, you have indicated that RTD is in what's known as the transit death spiral. What is going on?
Well, that was actually before the pandemic. RTD and other transit agencies have been losing riders for 5 years, and it's mainly because gas prices have gotten so cheap that low-income families have gone out and bought cars, and they're driving to work instead of taking transit. So they're losing riders, and because they lose riders, they lose revenue, and because they lose revenue, they cut back in service, and because they cut back in service, they lose riders. So it ends up spiraling downward. A lot of transit agencies in the country are in this position, or they were in this position, and then the pandemic hit, and transit ridership nationwide declined by 84% in April. Driving declined by 40% in April. And then in May, driving picked up. Driving in May was only 25% less than it was in May of the year before. The transit was still 81% less in May of 2020 than it was in May of 2019. So transit is way down. Driving is picking up as the economy picks up, but people aren't going back to transit. So RTD was in a death spiral before, but now it's in even more serious trouble because a lot of people aren't going to go back. And there's a couple reasons why they're not going to go back. I mean, first of all, people are saying, I don't want to be at risk of infections. But you know, at some point, we might come up with a vaccine. We might come up with a cure. Who knows? And then people might say, well, okay, now it's safe to go back. The other thing is a lot of people who were taking transit to work are now working at home. And a lot of employers have figured out, hey, our employees actually are more productive working at home, and it costs us a lot less than it does to rent some expensive office building somewhere. So Nationwide Insurance is closing almost all of its offices and telling all of its employees to work at home after the pandemic is over. And Twitter and even Walmart is telling thousands of its employees that they're going to get to work at home after the pandemic is over. So those people were among some of the people who were riding transit. And we're going to see transit ridership probably go down 20%. In other words, it's never going to get back up to more than 80% of what it was before the pandemic, just because so many people are working at home.
Well, and then another thing with RTD is a big revenue stream for RTD is the sales tax. And that's probably gotten knocked around pretty significantly during the pandemic as well. Have you taken a look at that, Randall?
Yes, and that's true for transit agencies all over the place. Sales taxes are the number one source of revenue for transit agencies. They get more sales taxes than they get from the federal government. They get more sales taxes than income or other taxes. And sales taxes are way down, and that means that they're short of money. That was why they convinced Congress to give them $25 billion as a part of the CARES Act, the bailout. And now they say they need another $25 billion because sales taxes aren't picking up much yet. And the really strange thing is that sales taxes, everybody knows, are a regressive tax. And here we have the social justice warriors saying, let's make transit free. We'll have sales taxes pay for all the costs of transit. And yet transit's only real growth market in the past 5 years has been people who earn over $75,000 a year. People who earn less than $35,000 a year are significantly less likely, were significantly less likely to take transit to work before the pandemic than they were 10 years before that because they've been buying cars. They've been taking advantage of low gas prices. And the growth market is the wealthy. The median income of transit riders for the first time in history in 2018 was higher than the median income of any other commuters, people who drive alone, people who carpool, people who walk, any other kind of commuting. Transit had the highest median incomes because so many low-income people have abandoned transit. And so we're going to pay for transit by raising sales taxes. Great idea. We're going to make low-income people who aren't using transit pay to subsidize chauffeured rides for the high-income people who are using transit. Great idea. That's really socially just.
Yeah, that is really socially just. Very and I say that tongue-in-cheek there. So next question. During this pandemic, Governor Polis says he's going to make sure that rail line from RTD up to Boulder is going to be built. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, that was only the stupidest of the stupid light rail lines or the rail lines that were to be built as a part of Fast Tracks. I remember when I was debating Fast Tracks with the CEO of RTD, and I said, you know, it would be cheaper to give every low-income family that doesn't have a car in the Denver metropolitan area a new car, a brand-new Toyota Prius, not just an ordinary car. It would be cheaper to give them all a Toyota Prius than to build one of the rail lines that they wanted to build. And his response was, we can't give poor people cars. It would cause too much congestion. Classic example of let's keep the poor people in steerage and we'll have everybody else driving around in first-class automobiles. And that line up to Boulder and Longmont was the most ridiculous line of them all. It's really, really expensive. It's going to add very few riders. And they're predicting 10 years ago, actually 15 years ago, they were predicting it was going to cost something like $65 to subsidize every time somebody got aboard. One person gets aboard, that's $65, ka-ching. Another person gets aboard, that's $65, ka-ching. It's probably gone up to $100 by now per rider. And most of those people could ride a bus. I mean, we have the Flatiron Express going from Denver to Boulder. It's fast. It's the only Fast Tracks line that didn't have huge cost overruns, and it's the only Fast Tracks line that doesn't have a huge shortfall of riders, and it's comfortable, and it's buses. So why can't we just run the Flatiron Express up to Longmont instead of spending another couple $1 billion on a rail line that nobody's going to use?
Well, and where does Polis think that he's going to come up with the money for this?
You know, it doesn't really matter. When voters gave approval to Fast Tracks, they told RTD that they could tax them forever to build these lines. RTD's plan is to build that line. They just don't think they're going to have the money. They don't have the revenue to do it until something like 2040. But they're still planning to build it. And it's easy to promise to build it using somebody else's money or some future's money. And the fact that rail transit ridership has dropped by more than bus ridership. I said ridership has dropped by 80%, but rail transit ridership has dropped by 90%, and bus ridership has only dropped by 76%. The people who ride trains aren't riding them anymore, and they aren't going to be riding them anymore because they're all going to be working at home. So the idea that we should build another train just because of some inane promise that was made to big city to suburban mayors back in 2004 is stupid.
Well, Randall O'Toole, these policies that have been prevalent for a number of years, when I was on city council, I saw this, the kind of the romancing of transit-oriented developments and, you know, people living in these apartment buildings near these rail lines. And I actually had just recently done an interview with a young guy, Stephen Kessler, who has a doctorate in higher education from University of Rochester, but he's really kind of taken a look at these different narratives. And he said that under Marxism, there is an abolition of property rights. And I was always so uncomfortable with public policy that was really being used to push people into apartments instead of home ownership, because home ownership is a way for people to create wealth. And, you know, it's all been done with the romance of you'll be right on the rail line. And so, you know, we've seen that up and down the corridor here in Denver. But as I've learned more and more about this, I see that really was kind of antithetical to private property rights to push people into apartments. What would you say about that, Randall?
Well, there's no doubt about it. There was a book that was published in the United States in 1971 that was a translation of the original book in Russian that was published in 1965 called The Ideal Communist City. And the book said, well, a family of four has two children and two adults, and they only need two bedrooms, and we can squeeze that all into about a 600-square-foot apartment, and so we should just build thousands and thousands of 600-square-foot apartments, build them, you know, five stories tall. When we get the technology, we'll build them 10 stories tall. And that's what they did throughout Russia and Eastern Germany and Poland and other Eastern European countries, not to mention Korea and China and a lot of other countries, and not just communist countries. A lot of Western countries built these high-density apartment buildings as well. And this is the urban planning thing of the 1960s, the 1970s. Today, they're focusing on 5- and 6-story buildings, which is ridiculous because they need an elevator, but an elevator won't pay for itself unless you build more than 6 stories. So they're not market viable, so they have to be subsidized. And with the revelations about the pandemic, people are saying, I don't want to live in a place like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't want to live there before. Most people wanted to live in a single-family home, but they couldn't afford a single-family home because of Denver's urban growth boundary. But now they don't want to live in it anyway, and so they're going to move to Colorado Springs and commute to Denver. They're going to move to Greeley and commute to Denver. You know, they're going to move up to Idaho City and commute to Denver. They don't want to deal with Denver crowding.
I think we're
going to see more and more of that.
Yes, I think we're going to see a resurgence in rural America as well because of this. So, Randall O'Toole, we're just about out of time. What would be the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners this morning?
I guess I just want to emphasize that transportation really is something that is accessible to everyone. It doesn't really matter whether you have an old Yugo or a Rolls Royce. You have access. You have the same access to 4 million miles of highways, roads, and streets in the United States, and that takes you just about everywhere you'd ever want to go. Whereas if you limit yourself to public transportation and Amtrak, you can only go to a limited number of places. You can only go on the schedules that somebody else decides are appropriate for you to go on. And so, like I say, social justice warriors should demand that low-interest loans be made available to poor people so that they can have the same transportation that everybody else has.
Most definitely. And Randall O'Toole, where can people find all of your writings and your opinions?
Well, I have a blog called The Anti-Planner. Just Google Anti-Planner, and I'm the first thing on the list. And everything I write is linked there. I write for the Cato Institute. I write for Real Clear Policy, had an article by me last week, and a lot of other things, but they're all linked from The Anti-Planner.
Well, fantastic. Randall O'Toole, thank you so much, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
And our quote for today is from comedian Dave Barry. He says, the one thing that unites all human beings, regardless of age, gender, religion, economic status, or ethnic background, is that deep down inside, we all believe that we are above average drivers. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.